We come for blue. Welcome, everybody, to the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation. For the record, it's May 3, 2017. We had to start a little late waiting for our vice chair.
Oh, it's after 3.
We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2575. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2575 expands the exemption from the requirement to equip vehicles with brakes to include trailers that transport dories. This bill passed the House 57-0. There is no fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and no amendments, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gomberg, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. David Gomberg from House District 10 on the sunny Oregon coast. This is a simple bill, and I won't take much of your time with it, except to explain that the iconic dory float has been operating for hundreds of years, or at least 100 years, on the beaches of Tillamook County. You're probably familiar with these vessels that come ashore on the beach between Cape Kiwanda and the Pelican Brewery. And the folks out there, some of them are operating commercially, and some of them are operating recreationally. And the only distinction between the recreational fleet and the commercial fleet is an Oregon statute that says that any commercial trailer is required to have mechanical brakes. Now, let me say that again. They're required to have mechanical brakes even if they're designed to back into the ocean and then come out onto the sand with a dory on the back. You can, I'm sure, quickly visualize what kind of problems that creates for a mechanical braking system. So we have brought forward this bill that would exempt dory trailers from the requirement to have mechanical brakes. And this was vetted on the House side. We talked about safety issues. We made some changes in the weight load to make sure that we weren't going too far. And I present it for your consideration today and hope we can move it along.
Senator Riley.
So do the trailers that carry my brother-in-law's boat from Oregon City to the coast, do they have mechanical brakes?
Yeah. I would believe so. Mr. Chairman, Senator Riley, I would believe so. Does your brother have a dory boat?
No.
Okay, then I would. If it's a commercial vessel, then it would be required to have mechanical brakes.
Not a commercial, a recreational vehicle.
Recreational is not subject to the commercial requirement.
Thank you.
So say it. Okay, any other? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You too.
Well, I just want to make a comment and to agree, concur completely with the good representative. I just we had gotten news today. I don't know how many people know this, but one of those. I'm Arnie Roblin, Senate District 5, for the record.
Thank you, Senator.
Paul Hanneman, who was here, passed away last night, and so
that's too bad.
Being that he was kind of the face of the dory fleet for a long time, I just thought it was probably important for people here to know, and some of you worked with him. So.
He's a very nice guy.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with this bill, but there is another bill that we need to deal with because there was a court decision involving the dory fleet that we need to resolve, because everyone at the coast is going to be liable for not having signage up to talk about all the hazards on the coast, which I find ridiculous, but we need to do something. And I know the Coastal Caucus has made that a priority, and I think it would be really nice if we could get that other bill.
But that has nothing to do with this bill.
Nothing to do with this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're absolutely correct, but it has nothing to do with this bill. Amy.
Billboards.
This is a good bill.
Chair Byron, members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation, today representing our Motor Carrier Division. And just to summarize, there are three situations under federal law where a trailer like this would need to have commercial brakes, mechanical brakes. And it's if you're in interstate commerce and you're over 10,000 pounds, if you're in intrastate commerce and over 26,000 pounds, and I should restate there are two situations. Those are the two where under federal law you're supposed to have these mechanical brakes. And so the way the bill's written, it is those vehicles in intrastate commerce, and everyone's understanding of the dory fleet is that they operate in intrastate commerce. So this bill will comply with federal law. That's all I have.
Cool. So no objections?
None.
Great. Any questions of Amy?
Thank you, Amy.
That's all I had signed up. Does anybody else wish to testify on House Bill 2575? Don't see any. Close public hearing. Open a work session on House Bill 2575.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2575A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved House Bill 2575A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, is there any objections to the motion?
I'll carry.
Okay. Okay, House Bill 2575A passes to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation by unanimous vote of the committee, and Senator Girard wishes to carry. He wants to talk about Dory's. We'll close on that, and we will. Which one next?
The next one on the list, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2695.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Patrick.
House Bill 2695 exempts certain towing vessels and their towed barges from the requirement that a licensee, the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots, pilot the vessel. This measure had a House vote of 57-0, has a minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, Mr. Chair, and there are no amendments.
Thank you, Senator. Welcome again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the rest of the committee, for the record, Arne Roblin, Senate District 5, Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay and into Sheridan and Falls City in the Valley. This bill, comes to you because we've had a practice for the last 100 years that tugboats could bring their barges across the bar at Coos Bay and would not need a pilot. And we really haven't had any safety problems or violations. So we currently have a situation about a year ago when the board decided, for maritime pilots, decided that, as they read all their statutes, that they didn't see that that was necessarily the way they could read it, and that was brought to their attention. Senator Representative McEwen and I met with the Board of Maritime Pilots and others to talk about that issue, trying to figure out if we could come up with a solution. One of our local mills uses Canadian logs from time to time, which we bring down. We wish we were cutting our own logs, and so does he, Mr. Smith. So we tried to figure out if there were ways to solve this problem by going and talking to them and see if they could make an adjustment, a different ruling, whatever. That did not work out. And so we decided the only way we could actually solve this problem was to actually come up with a bill that basically puts us back to the place we were for the first 100 years of maritime work in Coos Bay with respect to barges and pilots. In the House, it was vetted a lot, including checking to make sure that because we're taking it from one country to another, is that a problem? The issues all got resolved from the perspective of whether there's any international law, any kind of other kinds of problems with respect to that. You have people here who can answer some of those questions if you have any. Washington has the same situation, and tugs can take stuff back and forth. We'll see how that goes as we have conversations with Softwood, with Canada, and the new administration. So we'll see how whether the costs and stuff are prohibitive. But it adds a significant cost in Coos Bay of about $7,000 each trip coming in and out with getting a pilot making that move. And we have invested as a state in trying to make the timber industry, in particular Southport, and you're going to hear from the owner and operator and of Southport, talk a little bit about what they have done with small dimension logs to cut and do different things. They've been an active member of our community, and we believe this bill solves a problem that did not need to exist. And I urge your support.
Thank you. Questions? Is the senator?
Don't see any. I got one. Yeah. No, I'll wait till the other people testify.
All right, sir.
Yes, my name is Jason Smith. Thank you for allowing me to talk today. I'm the owner and operations manager of Southport Forest Products. Southport was started by myself and my current business partner about 20 years ago. Currently today, we have an employee force of about 140 employees. We buy logs from private timberlands throughout the state of Oregon, as well as Forest Service, BLM, and state timber sales. That is not enough for us to supply our mill. So for several years now, we've gone to Canada. We actually buy logs in Canada and barge them down to our facility in Coos Bay. For many years, we've been able to get by with supplementing our needs locally with the log out of Canada. And about a year and a half ago, as Senator Roblin spoke, The pilots started requesting that we have pilotage on our tugs that tow the barges across Coos Bay. And as Arnie said, that adds about $7,500 to the cost of each voyage. And it's real specific about where those barges originate. We have a contractor right now that's hauling barge loads of logs from Canada and northern Washington to our mill. And he basically is just doing round-trip circuits from Coos Bay to British Columbia, back to Coos Bay, and he might stop in Washington. And the interesting thing, and pick up logs there, because we also buy logs in Port Angeles and Connor, Washington. And this defines the problem of our pilotage laws right now, is that tug and barge, when they pick up logs in Washington, they can come into Coos Bay, discharge logs, and we don't have to have a pilot. Same crew, same captain, same barge, same tug, same everything. That same barge, then, when he goes back to Canada and picks up a barge load of logs and he comes into Coos Bay, he has to have a pilot on board, and it's about $7,000. And all we're asking is change the laws so that he can clear customs in Coos Bay and not have to have a pilot on board. It seems straightforward enough to me. So,
okay.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. This is Dave Bartz. I work at Schwabe Williamson & Wyatt in Portland, Oregon, and I'm here just to help support Southport, helping them with this. All I can tell the committee is this keeps in place, the senator's bill keeps in place something that's been happening for over 30 years. There was a change in the way that U.S. Customs for the state government or federal government analyzed this and did some things differently, which then required the type of tug and barge didn't change. Same cargo, same flotilla, same everything, but now it had a different label on it, and that different label requires that it take a pilot under Oregon's law if it isn't changed. Washington has an exception just for this situation. There's been some suggestion in the halls that that's under review. There's no evidence of that. You have a bill or a letter from the American Waterways Association, which is the national association of these tug and barge operators, that tells you that there's really no complaints and have been no complaints up in Washington or in British Columbia. It's safe. There's thousands of tons of cargo that come every year in and out of Oregon with this kind of an operation. There's never been an issue. Some of the pilots have raised some concerns, and all I can tell you is what they're suggesting is perhaps everybody ought to be a 747 pilot, but a King Air pilot's a pretty qualified pilot and can take us all safely down to places like Coos Bay, and we don't need to have the extra big ship pilots for a cargo and a towing arrangement that's been successfully and safely done for very many years. The Coast Guard doesn't have any issues with this. We're not aware of any of that. So we just think this is a bill that keeps in place something good for the first products industry. It's been safe and been working pretty well for over 30 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Senator?
Yeah, I have, first of all, a comment. I think it's really sad that we have to buy logs in Canada. I just do, especially when we have the Elliott, and I come from timber company, so I really feel for you. The question I would have is, I was unaware that you could clear customs in Coos Bay, so the question is for Arnie, what other ports are there that we can clear customs?
We're an international port. I expect that
Astoria,
Columbia Rivers, Astoria, Portland are also, but I think we're the only one on the coast.
Right.
Actually, the coast other than Columbia.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yes. Sir. So is there anybody else that would be affected by this? Or is it pretty much just your company bringing the logs in and out?
There's one more company, Georgia Pacific, that has a sawmill in Coos Bay as well, and they also are bringing logs out of Canada to their mill.
Okay, so follow up. So would there be other things that this might open up that the pilots are doing right now, and they'd lose more business or something if they let you guys do this? Do you?
I can't imagine any. I mean, I think you probably have somebody here that's going to testify, but this is tug barge traffic only, and that's a big part of our industries. We have a lot of barge. Sauce Brothers is here, is in Coos Bay. They outfit their barges that are built up at Vigor, and they bring them down. And no one's talked to me about any other issue with regard to this particular deal, and it's only about Coos Bay. This bill is pretty specific.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Greg, you're signed up. Did you wish to testify?
Good.
You're good? Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on House Bill 2695? Yes, please. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Beyer, Vice Chair Thompson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tess Milio. I'm here today on behalf of the Coos Bay Pilots as well as the Columbia River Pilots in opposition to House Bill 2695A. Captain Yates and Captain Wales were unfortunately out on trips today and were unable to make it, but I do have Todd Zilbert here with me, who is the lawyer for both the Columbia River Pilots and the Coos Bay and Yaquina Bay Pilots. So as a general rule, marine vessels coming from a foreign country are required to have a state-licensed pilot on board entering any of Oregon's waterways. It is our understanding that this bill came about because there was a company that was checking in with customs in Washington on its way down from Coos Bay, from Canada to Coos Bay, and therefore becoming a coastwise vessel. And so then when customs stopped the practice of checking them in Washington, the company, or this, sorry, the barge, tug and barge, turned in, was now a foreign vessel and therefore needed a pilot in the Coos Bay area. So we're sympathetic to this company's case. We benefit from a thriving economy in Coos Bay. However, the bill goes beyond that, and as written, it does open up the potential for any company to go from British Columbia to Coos Bay without a pilot and without any local knowledge of the area, which is concerning to us. We're just worried about the risk that the safety risk involved there. I did submit for the record a letter that does outline the different regulations, a state licensed pilot versus a federal pilot versus acting as pilot versus what's allowed with this legislation. So that should be on OLIS for you to review. Oregon has really strict pilot regulations, and these exist because we have tricky waterways to navigate. There are places on the river and on the bars at the mouth of the Columbia and the Coos Bay where vessels are, pretty close to the bottom. And that's why there's such an emphasis on local knowledge of a waterway. The pilots that operate around the state are not interchangeable, so the Columbia bar pilots don't navigate the Columbia River and vice versa. You have to have a special license for that region. And that's the same with the Coos Bay Bar. So there are only three pilots that are licensed to take boats across the Coos Bay Bar, and that's because it is really treacherous and challenging. So I know that proponents have made the argument that Washington allows this, that they can come from British Columbia without a state licensed pilot on board. I think that is true, but the issue I want to clarify is that the Puget Sound is significantly different than the waterways we have both in Coos Bay and on the Columbia River, and then also on the Columbia River because it's shared by both Washington and Oregon, the stricter of the two regulations are applied on that river. So because Oregon does not allow these foreign vessels to come from Canada without a state licensed pilot on board, they do have to have one on the Columbia River. So we think that the rules that are in place and have been in place for a long time, are doing the right job. They are keeping, the incident rate as low as it can be and keeping it safe. And we think this is a strong safety regulations are critical for protecting human health, cargo, and the environment. So thank you for your consideration, and we're happy to take questions.
So I guess the question, and maybe it's just a legal thing, I've discovered over the years that when you start dealing with piloting and maritime issues, there's nothing that's simple. But if I understand this correctly, if a barge or if a tug picked up a load of logs in Alaska and pulled them down to Coos Bay, they wouldn't be required to have a pilot.
May I address that?
Yeah. Sure.
Thank you, Senator Beyer. My name is Todd Zilbert, for the record. I'm a lawyer in private practice in Portland. I represent the Columbia River Pilots and the Coos Bay Pilots today. I'm an adjunct professor at Willamette University School of Law in Admiralty Law since 2009. I've been practicing maritime law in Portland for over 25 years. That's my background. That's all right. You're right, pilotage is a complicated matter. Since 1789, Congress saw fit to leave the regulation of most pilotage to the states. And the reason for that is that pilotage is really a very local issue. You can't compare pilotage in Coos Bay to pilotage in Puget Sound, no more than you could compare pilotage on the Columbia River Bar to pilotage in Long Beach, California. It's a very local issue. There is, in this country, two pilotage regimes. There's federal pilotage and there's state pilotage. Vessels that are subject to federal pilotage are U.S. flag vessels when they are sailing coastwise, so from one U.S. port to another U.S. port. They must have on board a federal pilot. The pilots of Coos Bay and the pilots of the Columbia River are both federal and state pilots. For pilotage in on U.S. flag vessels that are not sailing coastwise but are sailing under register, which means they're not using their coastwise endorsement on their certificate of documentation. For such vessels, they must have a state pilot when they enter Coos Bay or Columbia River. And that is also true for all foreign flag vessels, with very few exceptions. There are exceptions carved out for smaller foreign fishing vessels and smaller recreational vessels. So since before Oregon was a state, there has been state pilotage, and I think it was the territorial legislature in 1849 that enacted pilotage regulation, and there's been a was originally called the Board of Pilot Commissioners, but became the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots, and a comprehensive regulatory regime governing the licensing of state pilots and the rates that are to be charged for pilotage. Okay, so what we have is a dual regime, federal pilotage and state pilotage. What this bill would do would be to eliminate any pilotage for these particular vessels. The bill as written says that the crew of the tug need only be operating under its federal mariner's license. There's no requirement that they have a federal pilot endorsement. So the tugs and barges that they are proposing to bring into Coos Bay would have effectively no pilotage. There was testimony today that the operators of these boats are on a circuit coming in and out of Coos Bay routinely, are very familiar with the waters. That may be true. And they may have federal pilot licenses. And so they may be doing everything that a U.S. flag vessel operating coastwise would be required to do. But this law doesn't require it. There's no requirement for a pilot of any kind on board these tugs and barges. And if you could conceivably, under this law, be operating legally and have a master on board the tug and a crew who had never been in Coos Bay before. It's a matter of local knowledge. That's what pilotage is all about. The idea is someone coming to your waters who hasn't been here before shouldn't be operating a vessel on those waters. He should take on board someone that has expert local knowledge. That's the point. That's all it's really about. It's just about safety. We want someone with expert local knowledge to take command of this vessel, or at least to act as a advisor to the person in command of the vessel. This bill would change Oregon law so that neither federal nor state pilot need be on board these tugs when pulling barges of 10,000 tons or less. And that is a change that we are concerned about. Thank you.
Any questions?
I guess.
Go ahead.
So have they always, they haven't charged these tug guys that are bringing the logs in. When did they start, or when did they start charging? Because they weren't charging before is what I heard, I think. So now something changed. So before they were doing this, right? They've been doing this for years and years and years and years. So why, what was wrong with those pilots? I'm sure they're not going to send somebody down there that hasn't been in the port before. But a few years ago, they weren't charging them to do this, and they were fully capable, I guess, of doing this. But so why wouldn't they be now if this bill passed?
I think the point is the industry may well be using tug operators. I hesitate to use the word tug pilot. It is often used as tug pilot, but then you get confused with a pilot. So I'll use the word tug operator for the master of the tug. It may well be that the tug operator is very experienced in Coos Bay, and there's nothing in this bill that would require it. There's nothing in this bill that would say a new tug operator on his first trip from British Columbia to Coos Bay could bring his tug and barge across the bar, and having never done that before. So I don't know what change has occurred in the industry. It may be that before they were bringing lumber from Alaska or from Washington to Coos Bay, in which case they wouldn't need a state licensed pilot because it's a U.S. flag vessel operating coastwise. They would need a federal pilot. They would not need a state pilot. Okay. If you come from Canada or any other foreign port, then you implicate the state license requirements, or whether or not you're a U.S. flag vessel. A foreign vessel or a U.S. flag vessel not sailing coastwise would also have to have a pilot. This bill, no pilot.
So can I add to that? But on the same vein, so when you come from a foreign port, you are required to have a state license pilot. If you are coastwise, you've checked in through customs from Canada before you come to this port, then you do not need a state license pilot. That is the difference. So, yeah.
Okay, more? Don't think about it.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Does anybody, that's all I have signed up. Does anybody else wish to testify on House Bill 2695? Don't see anybody, so I think we'll close the public hearing on this and schedule it for a work session on May 10th. I think that's the next week from today, right? Okay, so we're closed on that, and we are now opening a public hearing on 2899.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2899 came to us with a vote of 59-0 from the House. It authorizes ports to enter into intergovernmental agreements as allowed by ORS Chapter 190. There's no fiscal or revenue impact of the measure and no amendments, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Representative. Senator.
Thank you.
Back again.
And for the record, I'm Deborah Boone from the beautiful Upper Left Coast House District 32, where the sun is shining inland but not on the coast. Just a little inside tip.
Okay, that's good.
So this bill was brought to our Coastal Caucus, which is the bicameral, bipartisan, 8-member group of coastal legislators. And when we agree on something and sign off, we have to come to consensus, so all of us agree on this. And these are kind of how there are three of them. 2899, 2900, and 2901, brought to us from the Association of Oregon Ports. And this one, as Patrick so eloquently reported, just provides that ports may enter into intergovernmental agreements for any purpose permitted under the ORS Chapter 190. And these are bills that were brought to the Coastal Caucus. We all represent ports along our coast, and this will help them do their work more efficiently. So I urge your support.
Thank you, Senator.
Again, thank you. For the record, Arne Roblin, District 5, part of the Coastal Caucus as well. Actually, most of the bills you're hearing today have been in front of the Coastal Caucus. And we appreciate the opportunity for our Coastal Caucus to have the ports come and talk to us at the beginning of the session about the bills that they thought were important. This one is one of those that I think Senator Giraj can appreciate because it specifically says in another statute that they can enter into certain agreements. But people got the ports decided, well, sometimes when you say this list of things is approved and you don't say that these others are, even though it's implied that they are, people interpret that to mean, well, if they said these are, why didn't they say those were? So what we're trying to do is clear up that all of them apply and with respect to ports having the ability to make agreements with other government groups. So would urge your support.
Standard legal construct.
Yeah.
Questions? I see no questions.
Thanks.
I guess you got off easy.
Okay.
Mr. Landauer? Well, hold on here a second. Do you two want to talk on just a second, Mark? Just,
I don't think they care about this one.
Not this one.
You're not hearing this one?
I think.
Cool. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. Mark Landauer here on behalf of the Oregon Public Ports Association. Currently under ORS 777112, it basically says that ports can enter into intergovernmental agreements for the purposes of improvement or maintenance of the bays, harbors, channels, shores, and banks. Needless to say, one could interpret that to be very narrow for ports, and obviously under ORS 190, that it embodies the intergovernmental agreement statute, it applies to virtually all governmental bodies. What we're simply trying to do is clarify here, as Senator Roblin described, trying to ensure that it's very clear that ports can enter into intergovernmental agreements for any purpose whatsoever, and that's essentially the bottom line for this bill.
So you want to open the doors as wide as you can.
We would just simply like to be treated like every other governmental body.
All right. Any questions? Seeing none. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who wishes to speak on House Bill 2899? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing. We'll open work session.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2899 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson's moved House Bill 2899 to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, is there any opposition to the motion? House Bill 2899 moves to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. I believe Senator Roblin wishes to carry. And we'll close on that, and we'll open a public hearing on 2900.
Mr.
On 29, House Bill 2900.
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 2900 authorizes ports to advertise activities of the port and activities of others using port facilities. This is a 57-0 vote out of the House. There's no amendments, and it has no fiscal or revenue impact. Mr. Chair.
You're on.
And we're back again. And I'm still Deborah Boone from House District 32, the beautiful Upper Left Coast. And this bill is even shorter than the last one. It also was requested by the Ports Association, and our Coastal Caucus, in consensus, agrees with all this too. Authorizes ports to advertise activities of the port and activities of others using port facilities. And just, I can use an example. Just this last weekend, at the Port of Astoria in Astoria, we had the Crab and Seafood Festival, but it wasn't at the port this time. It was at the fairgrounds. But there are events that happen on the port properties. And, for example, maybe the Port of Portland holds a fair for something, and this will allow them to advertise for those events, too. Very good, Bill.
Senator Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the Hillsborough Air Show is held on the Port of Portland Airport in Hillsborough. And they advertise all the time. I'm curious why they can do that and other places can't.
Well, I don't have an answer for you, but I know that Mr. Landauer big. Probably does.
They're big.
They're big, okay.
Sometimes that's true.
This is Chair Beyer, Senator Riley, Representative David Brock Smith, House District 1. This is just some cleanup language for our coastal ports to just define in statute that they do have the ability to advertise so that we don't have any issues. And I believe Mark...
I'm okay with that.
Can you give me a nod? Yeah.
I'm okay with that. I'm just
curious.
Curious why some do and some don't.
Well, we still, Chair Beyer, Senator Riley, some ports do advertise. We have, they advertise events, they advertise services. But again, this is just some clarification in statute to make sure that there isn't any problems in the future.
Okay.
I was just here to support my two good colleagues from the House.
Okay. Anybody else got a question? Did you want to say anything more, Representative?
Well, no. It's a good bill. Should pass, Chair Beyer. It's I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 ports in my district, and so we're just making sure that they have the ability to advertise what wonderful services they offer our communities and the economic development opportunities that provide.
Allows you to be very portable.
Yes.
All righty. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mark?
You can stay here.
You can wait.
We're just going to
stay.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, here in support of House Bill 2900. Currently, under ORS 777-240, ports are limited to advertise in statute for the purposes of advertising their facilities and the commerce taking place at the port. There are a number of instances where ports may be undertaking other activities. I can think of, for example, the Port of Toledo has an annual wooden boat show every year, very big fair that takes place there. Under the current statute, they would be prohibited from advertising that. In the case of Senator Riley's question, I don't have an answer for you, but I could certainly speculate. I don't know if you would like me to. I would speculate.
You don't need to speculate.
Thank you. I appreciate you allowing me not to do so, but I can come
Mark,
up with a number of reasons why.
It's fine.
Very good. Thank you.
I would assume that even that wooden boat thing is commerce.
It could very well be construed as being commerce.
Just
yes.
Clearing up the law.
Yes,
got it.
Indeed.
Any questions of Mark or anybody else? Seeing none, thank you very much. That is all I have signed up for House Bill 2900. Does anybody else wish to address it? Seeing none, we will close public hearing. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2900. Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2900 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved House Bill 2900 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, we will House Bill 2900, is it an A? Nope. Just 2900 moves to the Senate floor with a do pass recommendation by unanimous vote of the committee. And Senator Roblin, you wear your sailor suit tomorrow, this day. We'll close on that one. We will open on House Bill 2901. Patrick.
Mr. House Bill 2901 increases from $500,000 to $2 million the threshold of real property value that requires a port to obtain an additional appraisal before making a purchase. This is a 58-0 vote in the House. There is no fiscal or revenue impact and no amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Who's up?
And
there you go.
Third time is a charm. I'm still Representative Deborah Boone from House District 32 and still support this bill. This is part of a package of bills brought to us by the Association of Ports. And very simply said, increases the threshold from $500,000 to $2 million of real port value, real property value that requires a port to obtain additional appraisal before purchase. So it's pretty simply said, and this is also a very good bill for port people.
Like it.
And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Senator Riley?
So when it says additional, that implies that there is at least one.
I can't lose it.
Mm-hmm. So
at least one, but it moves the fence up to $2 million instead of $500,000 before you have to have
sure. Before you have to have an additional one?
Right.
So, even those below that have to have one.
Yes.
Right.
That's all I needed to know. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Riley, for clarification, so the trigger is if that first appraisal is for over $500,000, then a second appraisal must happen. So the trigger is the first appraisal, the value of the first appraisal.
And after this bill, it's $2 million. Okay.
Right.
I'm fine. Thank you.
Representative?
Chair Beyer, committee, thank you so much. I, too, Representative Daberbach-Smith, House District 1, I, too, support House Bill 2901 for the reasons. I mean, my good colleague said, you know, ports often have real property and or other infrastructure. It's difficult to get commercial appraisals, and they're very expensive. And so this would allow that threshold to just increase to $2 million so that ports can save money and have things and time.
Mr. Landau.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. Mark Landauer here on behalf of the Public Ports Association, just to give a little bit more meat to the bone here. The last time this threshold was changed was in 1993, so obviously quite some time has passed. The reason we've introduced this measure and are seeking your support for it is because sometimes our very rural ports really struggle getting that second appraisal. In fact, we've had times where we've had to really struggle getting that second appraisal to actually show up in some of our more rural areas of the state. This simply increases the threshold. There is already a requirement, as Senator Riley has pointed out, to get a certified appraisal when a port is purchasing property. The key here is that we're raising that threshold from $500,000 to $2 million in order for the requirement to get the second appraisal, and that's the summary of this measure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Any questions to this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much. Let's see here. That's all I had signed up. Does anybody else wish to comment on House Bill 2901? Don't see any, so we close public hearing, open a work session.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2901 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved House Bill 2901 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, is there any opposition to the motion? Just seeing none, House Bill 2901 moves to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation by unanimous agreement of the committee. And any objection to allowing Senator Cruz to carry this one?
I'll ask
Senator Cruz to carry.
Good.
So we're closed on that. We will open on our final bill, House Bill 2902. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2902 authorizes ports to acquire, construct, maintain, and operate shipyards. This measure has no fiscal or revenue impact. No amendments, and it came to us on a House floor vote of 48 to 11, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Oh, look, it's a different panel.
Looks like a lot of the Coastal Caucus again. So for the record, Arnie Roblin, Senate District 5, that goes from Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay over to Sheridan and Fall City. This is a bill that in my district is a bit controversial. You're going to hear from a number of people from a wonderful town in our district, Reedsport. And I don't see a lot of the fishermen here from the city of Newport. But this has become a bill that is about those two. It's really about all ports in Oregon, up and down the Columbia and everywhere else. It's basically saying that what we believed was statutory impossible. If you go and look in the statute about what ports can do, it lists just about everything in under the sun. And so this bill clarifies that that also includes running a shipyard. The controversy has come about because there was a company in the port of Toledo who has a had facilities both there and in Reedsport, who decided to leave Toledo and move all of his operations to a new facility that he had purchased in Reedsport and build ships. I think he was also planning on some repair, but mostly it was to build new ships, and they've launched a few ships from there. It's a very good company. They do good work. There's no doubt about that. In leaving Toledo, the fleet in Newport, which is where they get most of their repairs done, was in Toledo, was pretty shook up because they didn't know where they were going to have their annual repairs, and so the company in Reedsport chose to offer to sell their facilities and stuff to the city, the Port of Toledo. The Port of Toledo paid about $1 million to buy that facility. They also got some money from the state to clean up the facility. It was about $900,000. And they also went about trying to find to make sure that they got the cranes necessary to bring these fairly large fishing boats out of the water and put them someplace so they can get worked on and repaired. There has been a controversy whether the Port of Toledo can do those kinds of things, and in fact, if they want to have a shipyard. Our feeling on the coast, and the reason that I have basically gone and talked to my people in Newport as opposed to being supportive of the situation in Reedsport, I'd like them all to survive. I want all businesses on the coast that have to do with shipping to be successful and to continue to grow. Our ports are some of our major economic development up and down the coast, and we need to give them every opportunity to be successful and meet the needs of those local fishermen. So we had a ice plant in Charleston, which is now in Brock Smith's place, that we loaned out and was run by a company on port property. They ran it until it didn't work anymore, and then they left. And so the port decided, since all of our fishermen needed ice, they would go into the ice business. So they got a board, and they built an ice plant. In Coos Bay, you know, you helped us buy a railroad. It wasn't something the port of Coos Bay wanted to do, but we now run a railroad. We contracted out because we don't think we didn't have the expertise to run it, but it was because our port needed to have the facilities there to make things work. What this bill does is say if people leave, if they can't do some other kinds of things, this is one more area in which ports can go ahead and make sure that they remain viable for the fishing fleet, for whatever other kind of maritime stuff that's going on. Do I hope that businesses come to those ports and lease out the land and do those kinds of things? Absolutely. And I think most port people would say the same thing. At the same time, if there is no option, I want to make sure that our ports have an option to be that mainstay of our economies on the coast and provide the things that need to be provided for our fleet and others to work. So I urge your eye support for this bill. I did have a good number of people in the House vote for it. It has put me in a conflicting deal because I do care about both of these places. They are amazing places. I hope you come and visit and spend money at Reedsport and in Coos Bay and in Newport. There's lots of places, and I think Brock Smith would tell you to come to Brookings. But this is a coastwide issue. It's not just those two places. It's making sure that ports remain viable and can be the economic hub for our communities. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Central Oregon Coast. I completely agree with Senator Roblin that we want all of our ports and all of the businesses associated with them to be successful. I would differ with him a little bit because this measure is not at all controversial in my district. Mr. Chairman, there are 23 public ports in Oregon. Five of them now are operating shipyards. And we went to Legislative Council and we asked the question, can they indeed operate shipyards? And the answer that came back from Legislative Council is, we believe the answer is yes. And then we asked the question, if this went to court, would the ports operating shipyards prevail? And again, the answer came back, probably yes. But my port operators don't want to spend a lot of time and money prevailing in court, which is why we brought this measure forward to try and clarify the situation once and for all. Now, as Senator Roblin has suggested, as simple as all that sounds, there is a backstory. The backstory, goodness, I wish on the way in I had picked up a button that said save our shipyards, because that's exactly what we're talking about here. In 2008, the shipyard operating in Toledo closed down. They went out of business, placing the maritime industry in Toledo and in Newport and in Depot Bay at serious disadvantage. At that time, the owner of the now-defunct shipyard offered to sell that to the Port of Toledo. So the Port of Toledo bought the shipyard. They spent about $1 million to clean up the shipyard. They put it back in business to the advantage not only of the maritime fleets in Depot Bay, Newport, and Toledo, but also to another 43 small businesses that are operating in conjunction with the Port of Toledo. And after all that process was complete, the individual that sold them the port took some umbrage at the fact that they were using the shipyard as a shipyard. Now, you're going to hear arguments today that, that private enterprise should not be forced to compete with tax-supported taxing districts. And I've got to say to you that I am not unsympathetic to that point of view. I don't believe that private enterprise should have to compete with governmental units, except when there are essential services that the private sector cannot provide. And as you look across the breadth of our ports around the state, you see some that are operating ice plants and warehouses and rail yards. You see some that are operating marinas or RV parks, and you see five of them that are operating shipyards. The Port of Toledo generates about $200,000 a year in property taxes. That's the advantage that we're talking about. I find it very interesting, Mr. Chairman, that the businesses that are complaining about this advantage were happy to accept a $3.4 million Connect Oregon grant to subsidize the competing port. By my estimate, that would take the Port of Toledo about 20 years to generate the same amount of tax dollars that their competition is already enjoying. And the question I would leave you with, Mr. Chairman, is if shipyards should not enjoy public dollars, can we have them back?
Representative?
Well, this is a tough crowd to follow. Chair Beyer. Committee, out of these, just to add to the conversation, this is State Representative David Brock Smith, House District 1. Of the ports in my district, and it was mentioned that there's five ports that operate and own shipyards, three of those five are in my district, which is one of the reasons why I'm sitting here today and fully in support of this bill. And as Representative Gomberg mentioned, it doesn't, on the face value of what's going on here, it looks like that we're supporting public enterprises, public entities are competing against private business. And I know that on the face value that's the case. And if you, as the vote was mentioned on the House side, it was quite a discussion in my caucus, I can tell you, about what's actually going on here. But in all honesty, and to put it bluntly, what's going on here really doesn't pass the smell test. And that's been discussed already by my colleagues. The Port of Toledo, as it was mentioned, collects over just roughly $200,000 in tax dollars from its residents. But the services that it provides are essential. And those services were bought with public dollars by the individual who is opposed to them using what he sold them. And that doesn't pass the smell test at all. In fact, we're in a situation where we're talking about essential safety of the fleet, and we're talking about the safety and economic stability of that fishing fleet in Newport. And when we're talking about essential safety of the fleet, that fleet and those boats don't have the opportunity, be it weather, be it damage to whatever needs to be repaired, to travel miles in the ocean to have the repair. The beautiful thing about the Port of Toledo is it's up the river and protected. And that port employs less than 10 employees. And those 10 employees, their only real job with regards to actually the within the definitions of this bill is to deal with transporting the boats because of liability issues with regards to the port. As Representative Gomberg said, 43 other private enterprise subcontractors provide the work, per se, to the individual fleet that utilize the Port of Toledo and its services. So when you look at this information, please remember that the opposition that you're going to hear from, well, let me back up. Ports don't want to own shipyards. Ports don't want to own ice houses. Ports don't want to own anything. The ports just want to manage the access to the ocean for the fishers to be able to go and provide economic development and benefits to their communities. That's all they want to do. Ports are forced to manage shipyards. They're forced to manage ice houses. They're forced to provide essential services where private business has either not found it economically viable to provide or has decided not to invest in that area. Our fishers are in dire need of these services. They're in dire need of these services, especially in the Port of Toledo, where we're talking about. They're in dire need of in my district, of the three of the five ports that provide the services. And when I say it doesn't pass the smell test, it doesn't, especially considering the $3.4 million Connect Oregon grant that has come through, and suddenly we're here today. So with that and with the testimony that you heard from Representative Gomberg, what we're doing here in this bill is clarifying what legislative counsel has already said is possible, but we're avoiding more tax dollars being spent on this issue because there's already enough. Remind you, over almost $1 million of tax dollars was actually $1.5 million purchased the port. Then there was tax incentives given for the difference. Excuse me. And then almost $1 million was used to clean up the brownfield of public tax dollars. There doesn't need to be more tax dollars used to fight a lawsuit to provide the essential services that are necessary with this bill. So I respectfully, after hearing the testimony, as the Republican sitting here, respectfully request your aye vote.
Thank you, gentlemen. Questions?
I got one.
Senator?
And it has to do with the verbiage of the bill. I hate to say it, but I read these things sometimes, most of the time. I mean, the guts of it is it allows the port to acquire, construct, maintain, and operate facilities for the construction, repairing, or maintaining any type of watercraft. I think you can read that in a lot of different ways. And if I was doing the bill and I would have had it, I would have tightened it up a bit. But are you amenable to some amendments, or do you want to? I mean, do you understand my concern?
I understand what you're saying completely. Our issue is to make sure that these ports over the long haul can continue to be viable. We anticipate that there are none that really want to run those things, but if no one else is available to do it, and there's no one wanting to build the barge that is going to bring grain down the Columbia, I would hope that the Port of Morrow would kind of figure out how to make sure that happens. We like having the total amount, what the bill is written is clearly what our council has told us they believe we would prevail with. We just wanted to keep the same thing in this bill. So there are amendments out there. I've talked to those people. I've talked to other Coastal Caucus members. And we believe that this expresses precisely what we, from my opinion, from all the people I've talked to, what we intended it to mean.
And Chair Beyer, Senator Girard, I would agree.
More?
No, I'm good.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for your consideration of all these court bills, Mr. Chairman.
You bet. That's true. Representative Boone, did you want to testify on this one?
No, but I agree.
You agree. Okay. Let's see. I want to make sure we have enough time for everybody. We have a rule that when time is tight, we give first call to those who have driven 100 miles or more. So I'm going to start with you and ask you to come up in panels of three. Let's see, who do I have here? These two. Randall Johnson, I think it's Aaron Ollinger, and I think I have John Burns, maybe? Okay, I'm just going by the ones who checked 100 miles. Welcome, gentlemen. Whoever wants to start, just please state your name and
I'll start.
I appreciate it if you can keep your comments tight.
Certainly. My name is Aaron Ollinger. I'm owner and co-owner and operator of AR Industries. We're a small and upcoming, most importantly, succeeding small business in the area in this particular industry. And as Senator Girard stated, this is certainly worded far too broad and overreaching in our opinion. And it really puts into question what we plan to do with our future and where we plan to go with what we have going at this point in time.
And again, where are you from?
Coos Bay.
Coos Bay, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Randall Johnson. I am also a co-owner of AR Industries. And like my business partner stated, it is a little broad. Where is the line in the sand drawn from? They can do, I would have to compete with my own government to repair boats. These boats, they can go to any port to get repaired. It's not just Toledo and Fred Wall. It affects us and all kinds of businesses up and down the coast. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon, Chairman Beyer, members of the committee. My name is John Burns, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer of the Oregon International Port of Coos Bay. I'm here today to offer my strong support for this legislation as it's currently written. The language of the bill just seeks to clarify what we believe is already the intent of 777.210. It is imperative that ports such as the Port of Coos Bay have the opportunity to protect the interests of our constituents. Today, we are very blessed in Coos Bay to have three outstanding operators using the facilities that are available in Coos Bay: Giddings Marine, Tar Heel Marine, and Scalroo Marine do excellent work, and we would like to see them there for as long as they can stay. That said, the port has no plans or inclinations to get into the operation of a shipyard. However, we have found ourselves placed in the path of having to do things in the past that were to benefit the entire community. You heard Senator Roblin before talk about the fact that the Port of Coos Bay had to take over the operation of an ice plant, something we had no desire to do, and I'll be perfectly blunt. We wish we didn't have to do it today. It's an expensive proposition, but it's one we know is of paramount importance to the fleet. The same thing with the Coos Bay rail line. We had no intention or desire or design to get into the railroad business, but it was something the community needed. So the Port of Coos Bay stepped in and took over and filled the void. Our mission is the sustainable economy of the south coast of Oregon, and we need to be prepared to do everything we possibly can when situations present themselves that require us to help support the local economy. We are champions of the economy, we are drivers of the economy, and we need to be able to be in a position to weigh all the potential options to make sure that that gets done. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Any questions of this panel? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Next three are, I think it's Neil Reiser, Mike Wall, and Jonathan Wright. Welcome, gentlemen. Whoever wants to go first.
Do you want to go first?
Okay. Good afternoon, Senator Byron. My name is Mike Wall. I worked at the Live and Reach Port, and I have some insight to the selling of the Toledo Yard to our Toledo Yard to the Port of Toledo. We sold them a haul-out facility. We didn't sell them a shipyard. We don't have a problem with them having a haul-out facility. We have a problem with them having a shipyard. A shipyard contains quite a bit of different aspects between just a standard haul-out facility that most ports have. I don't think any port has a real shipyard that constructs vessels, repairs vessels, and does that kind of work. So the point of us having a problem with the Port of Toledo isn't really there. The problem is that they're doing the shipyard construction, repairing, and doing the work on the vessels instead of letting a private entity do the work on the vessels. We understand that the Port of Newport needs a haul-out facility. We can make it viable. Port of Toledo and other ports get grant money. They should have a right to haul out a boat there for safety reasons, and that. I don't know what I'm saying is. I think it is very broadly written with construction and repairing any type of watercraft. I mean, next thing you know, they're going to be making kayaks and. I mean, it's pretty broadly written. So I'd like to answer some questions if you had any.
I'd actually like to ask him a question. When you sold it, did you get a non-compete clause?
No, we didn't. But since then, they've over doubled the tonnage of the lift that we've sold them. So we were servicing the boats in Newport, and they've doubled the tonnage capacity to compete with Coos Bay and other shipyards.
Chairman Meyer, if I may. Good afternoon, members of the committee. I wish we had more time. I tell you what, this is quite an issue. There's some information that's been given out that does not contain the full accurate statement of truth. I'm glad that Mike Wall's here. One of the things that we did early on in an economic development effort in our community.
Your name, please.
Oh, I'm Jonathan Wright, City Manager, City of Reedsport. I got carried away. And one of the things before I really get started, I'd like you to look at the room, the audience, and see the people that are here. There's the people that work here that are in favor of it, and we have the people that work in the industry that are here that are saying this isn't good for us. So I'm hoping that you pay attention to that. We got, unfortunately, I want to say the community got Fred Wall to where they are today through an economic development effort. After the loss of our entire timber industry, which is a total of about 1,600 jobs, and I stood before you just a couple weeks ago asking for $20,000 to keep our library alive because our economic condition is so poor. The last industry to leave was American Bridge, and we went to American Bridge and said, please don't tie this property up. We need you to be able to sell it. We need to be able to sell it quickly so we can get an industry in here so we don't lose everything that we've had. We worked with International Paper. We couldn't get them to ever do that. We went over to Mike Wall and Fred Wall and said, hey, we have an idea for you. What do you think of this idea? And that's how this vision for expansion got started. When they took on that assignment, we as a community said, we are going to support you in every effort here. So we as a community helped them acquire the grants that have been used against them now. That $3.4 million has not been expended to date. That $3.4 million is being used against him in all honesty, his father's feeling like I'd rather give it back. It's too much trouble. He spent $9 million of his own dollars out there on the island to create what is there today. And as a result, we have 30% more jobs in that business, and they're growing rapidly. We're able to provide the business or the services to the fleet of Newport, which, as you heard from the A&R Industries folks, they'll travel. These folks travel all over the place for these services. It does not have to have a shipyard in every port. A haul-out facility is one thing. And you have a bunch of individuals here that are blurring the lines between what a shipyard is and what a haul-out facility is. And I would like to, and it's already in the record there, submitted as part of my testimony, we actually analyzed all the 23 ports represented by the Oregon Public Ports Association, and we could find five of them that had haul-out facilities. There's only one of them that is operating a shipyard, and that's the Port of Toledo. And that port has only been operating for about 8 months in the capacity that they are. If you note here, the Port of Astoria that has a haul-out, they call it. It says shipyard, but then underneath there it says haul-out services. Then it says boat owners may contract repair work on-site through marine repair businesses or lease boatyard space to do it yourself. These folks have no problem with that because A&R Industries, because Fredwell Marine will go up there and do the work on those vessels. You have the one from, I wish I was more prepared here, the Port of Brookings, which is down south there. Now, they have a haul-out facility, too, and they say that they'll even loan you equipment to work on your own boat. Just let them know, and they'll bring it out for you. Let's see. They have Port Orford. That's a really sad story because they don't even have water under their boat, so they have to pick them up and take them out. But that's not a shipyard. That's, yet again, a haul-out facility. And then we have the latest one, which is the Port of Toledo, which testimony was given up here that they are just hauling boats out, and that's all they're doing at providing support services, yet they're hiring boatyard welders, marine painters, marine trades technicians, boat office supervisors, accounting specialists, and so on. So it looks to me like they're standing up a shipyard, and this is an old hat. This is something that's been very recent to the table. So what we have is a bill that came before you that was drafted by a handful of individuals from the OPPA, which are bringing this forward, representing it as it's the good of the whole public ports. Now, we went up and down, the mayor and I and a few individuals went up and down and talked to public ports. We talked to the actual committees, the elected officials that are involved in that, and they said, we had no idea. We didn't know this was happening. The Port of Brookings, Port of Umpqua even went so far, or Brookings abandoned, went so far as saying, we don't agree with this. This is not a good policy. We do not want to be in this position. So what I want to also, we looked at whether or not nationwide shipyards are owned and operated by ports, and I can't find a single one in there out of all the ones in the nation that are operated by a public port. So we have today Reedsport. This is the most we've seen in our waterfront in a long time. All those vessels, in fact, two of them that are over there from Newport right now. This is what our industry is doing. We have about 25% of the capacity maximized on that site, and we plan on growing that thing to 100%. When we grow it to 100%, we're going to have 100 more jobs than what we currently have. But we can't afford to compete with public shipyards. And I'll use an example. The Port of Coos Bay just bought a travel lift. That travel lift replaced two private travel lifts, the one being the one that's actually operating on the site there, and the other one being in Reedsport, down in Reedsport Machine. They're similar size lifts. And nowhere, according to them, none of the folks that I've talked to in the industry can match $530 to do two-way haul out plus power washing the underside and plastic sheeting the boat. They can't compete with the governmental entities. They don't have to pay income tax, personal property tax, real estate tax, and they're tax subsidized. If we were in a position where we needed to have shipyards, I would sit here, first of all, and say, Reedsport needs shipyards, but we don't. We have shipyards, and we have a bunch of young, up-and-coming shipyard operators that are here in the audience today, or ones that would like to have been here but have to actually work on the vessels, and they would like to be able to continue to operate and for perpetuity. And there's no place that I have seen that necessitates shipyards to be operated by ports. In fact, the legal description they keep referring to is by Ledge Counsel, and that one even provides caution that there's no case law or other authority on this issue. So if I went to my attorney, sorry, Steve, and said, hey, I need a legal opinion because I'm doing this, this is what I would get too. Yeah, you probably could do it. However, we don't think you should. So I'm going to end my testimony, but any questions? It's an economic thing for us. It means a lot, and we got Fred into this. I hate the fact that $3.4 million gets thrown back because that will be taxed time and time again for many years. And, you know, if the Port of Toledo gave up the $8 million that they had, I bet I could get him to give up the 3.8, and we'll put it towards something else.
Thank you.
3.4.
Sir.
Chairman Beyer, Neil Reiser. I have Western Machine there in Reedsport, and a good portion of my business comes from the ships. It's a trickle-down effect, though. I'm not directly out on the docks. I get my work from some of the boat captains themselves and then from other entities throughout the community. And so me being farther down the line, I can't afford to have any more competition from these ports if they do decide to come in and start taking away my jobs. I don't build ships, but I work on the parts of the ships as well, as far as reconditioning or manufacturing new. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Senator Riley?
Sir, did I hear you at your machine shop? Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Anybody else? Thank you very much. Okay, let's see here. Jim, is it Zimmer? Linda McCollum and Leslie Collier? Apologize if I've mispronounced any names. Whoever wants to go first?
Linda McCollum, the mayor of City of Reedsport. And thank you very much for hearing us. Jonathan and the previous speakers have said a lot. And so I am here just to emphasize that we are behind them and feel that this is definitely something, the 2902 should be amended to exclude their ability to build shipyards. They have said they aren't going to build shipyards. They have no plans to build shipyards. So why do we need it in the bill? So please, I ask you to amend it, so excluding the ability to build ships and run a shipyard. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Leslie Collier, and I am one of the 7 city councilors from Reedsport. And yes, we have our own gang of 7, and we are very vocal. Because of the passion and the commitment of our city manager, Jonathan Wright, I am here today to urge you all to amend this bill so private shipyards can continue to operate. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. You're right. Your city manager has a lot of passion. He's been up here a couple of times this year. Sir.
Hi. Chair Beyer, committee members. My name is Jim Zimmer. I represent Fred Wall Marine Construction in Reedsport. We've heard quite a bit today, so, and you're going to hear just a little bit of the same. But anyway, a lot of what you heard was some misinformation. The shipyard that Fred Wall supposedly shut down and left Toledo, it wasn't in Toledo when Fred moved to Toledo. The other things that kind of make a difference is we've been in Reedsport since 1991. The Toledo yard didn't even open up until, well, now I got lost my dates, somewhere around 2000. Anyway, so it wasn't like Fred shut down a shipyard to move to Reedsport, open another shipyard, and focus on new construction. Anyway, back to my script here. I'm here to state my concerns over the wording of the bill. We're a privately owned shipyard on the Central Coast. We've been in Reedsport since 91. In the shipyard world, we're a small business, and that's one that employs less than 1,250 people. We're currently at just over 100. We build and repair boats of all kinds. Our main clients are commercial fishermen from all over the West Coast and Alaska. About 60% of our revenue is from repairs. Contrary to what you've been told, is that we focus on new boat construction. That's not true. In 2014, we were approached by our Douglas County commissioners and city elected officials about the possibility of expanding to the Bolin Island site. It had just been vacated by American Bridge. In December of 14, we closed on the property, started redeveloping it into what's becoming one of the nicest small shipyards on the West Coast. At the time, we expected to create an additional 40 positions, full-time positions. To date, we've got roughly over $8 million in private funds in that expansion. We haven't received a dime of Connect Oregon funds. We've also hired 25 more people. That's 25 new family wage jobs. These jobs amount to approximately $840,000 of direct payroll. With the help of the Connect Oregon grant, we are able to add $3.5 million to the next phase of our project, which is pretty cool. It's supposed to be complete in April of 18, and it'll create, we expect right away, it'll create another 15 jobs. That's another $500,000 in wages a year. It would seem to me with those numbers that that $3.4 million was a pretty, will end up being a pretty good return on investment for the state. If things go as planned, we'll put another $500,000 in wages on the street. Oregon will have a facility that the state can be proud to have made an investment in. Naturally, the anticipated employment numbers were put together before we found out we might have to compete with publicly funded entities. The question, really, that somebody has to ask themselves is, would we have made that investment knowing that we were going to compete, have to compete with ports that, geographically speaking, in the marine world, and the distance between Coos Bay, Reedsport, and Newport is nothing. If you leave Dutch Harbor, you're going to get to either one of them ports within minutes. I mean, it's a long ways. There's not much of a difference. So now we've got to compete with, we've got to look at competing with these other two ports that are going to have, that are building to have the same capability that we have. Would we have done that? No. So those 25 full-time jobs that we've already increased probably wouldn't be there. Now, somebody else might have bought the property, who knows? And proponents of the bill will tell you that the local fishing fleets will suffer if this bill doesn't pass to allow them to perform repairs on fishing boats. I disagree. There are small privately owned businesses that will step up to fill the need for providing repairs as long as the facility is available. That's the key. Provide the facility, let the small businesses perform the repairs. In fact, I have a letter here. This is from Toledo Small Marine Trades Contractors. It's by Reno Randall. It was provided in Port of Toledo's Connect Oregon grant package. There's 32 private contractors supporting them for the sole. The build-out is necessary for the continued growth and prosperity of our businesses and the local economy. If the boats hire, if Toledo is hiring welders and fabricators and painters, how is that not competing with some of those local contractors? It has to be. And some of those I know that Yaquina Boatworks is a fabrication facility, so there's one. I believe the Port of Toledo right now is performing a sponson on a boat. That is a substantial alteration, according to the Coast Guard. Does the port really want to get there? Do they have the expertise to do that? It sounds a lot like running a railroad. Is it something they should be doing? Okay, so the port claims DEQ has told them they need to perform sandblasting and painting in order to stay in compliance with current regulations. We didn't hear that today. We heard that before the House. If that's truly the case, then they're kind of in a unique situation. Ray Cox, who you're going to hear from, owns Giddings Boatworks. He leases his property from the port. The port doesn't do his painting. He does his painting. Ole Nelson, Reedsport Machine, the port doesn't do their painting. We don't have to have somebody come in and do our painting to stay in compliance with DEQ regulations. Maybe there is something there. Maybe the fact that there was $1 million worth of cleanup made a special circumstance. What hasn't been brought up, though, is that the manager of that shipyard was the port director that's in charge of the Port of Toledo today. He managed that shipyard during some of this time. But nobody wants to talk about that. As boat owners ourselves, we recognize the need to be able to haul out when a schedule permits, and that there can be a major cost and life safety issue involved in deferring maintenance due to lack of haul-out facilities. We appreciate it. We understand that there's a need for public funding to provide those facilities if they're not available. Operate a haul-out facility, but don't perform repairs. Port of Coos Bay was asked specifically at the House committee, do you plan on building boats? No, we don't plan on building boats. That was the response. Then why create a law that allows them to do it in the future? Sure, they may not plan on building boats right now, but what about next week, 10 years down the road? Anyway, I'm not going to bore you with the rest of this.
I appreciate your time. I'm sorry if I appear frustrated. I've heard several things that were untruths about our company, and I don't appreciate it. Unfortunately, I'm not armed to defend us because I didn't come here to defend us. I came here about the validity of this bill. It has nothing to do with Fred Wall, nothing to do with Toledo, Coos Bay, any of it. It has to do with what it says and how broad it is. It allows the ports to do pretty much anything they want to. If they want to open a machine shop, sorry about Neil's bad luck. I mean, so just change it now, and we won't have to worry about what it does to us in the future. Thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer
Thank
questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you very much. Okay, I have Steve Miller and Ray Cox. And is there anybody else who is from more than 100 miles away? Okay. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hello, my name's Ray Cox. I own Giddings Boat Works in Charleston. And I'm not going to really, I can't beat what Jim and John has said. I agree 100%. What I find kind of funny, I'm on the other end of the spectrum here. I don't get any kind of grants. I never have. I've been in there for 16 years. I've leased property at the Port of Charleston, Port of Coos Bay. And I invite any of you to come and see the disrepair that's in our yard. I kind of find it funny that if I was there worried that if I'd walk away, that they can come in and run a shipyard. Well, that'd be kind of funny that they can then magically find some funds to start fixing and repairing boats, and it'd probably happen. But right now, they're not finding anything. We're finally starting to get some things took care of right now. But I have 20 employees. And like Jim said, it makes me wonder, do I still want to keep going and growing, spending money there, knowing that they can shut me out anytime they want by this ruling, you know? There's no protection for me or to stay around, spend money, and try to grow. It's like a threat. So that's all I got to say.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Steve Miller. I'm a resident of Douglas County, Reedsport. Been there since 1971. I have two employees, myself and my wife. I heard something, I believe, from Senator Roland was kind of interesting. If no private entity is reasonably available to provide the service or product, I wonder if that was an amendment he was trying to make to the bill as it's presented. At any rate, I do support the amendment that Mr. Wright has proposed and encourage you to think about a level playing field for private industry. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Is there anybody else who, again, lives more than 100 miles from the Capitol? All righty, we'll go up and stop the list then. Get those closer. So, Bud Shoemaker?
Shoemaker.
No, okay. Kevin Mannix and Mark Landau. No, Mark. Whoever wants to go first.
Mr. Welcome. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Mannix. I'm an attorney in private practice in Salem, and I'm here on behalf of the West Coast Marine Trades Association, which is a fairly new organization we've created. I'm also here on behalf of the Oregon Shipping Group, which has existed now for about a year and a half, and I'm also here on behalf of the folks who have spoken in opposition to this legislation as presented. And as we begin this discussion at this stage of the play, perhaps the third act, I'd ask us to pause. There's a phrase from Pyramus and Thisbe, the narrator. Gentles, Perhaps you wonder at this show, yet wonder on till truth make all things plain. And what I'm getting at is the truth here has to do with the public policy issue that we are trying to address in the Legislative Assembly, not a he said, she said fight between a couple of folks. It's the legislature's job to look at what's the best public policy for the state. Had I had the opportunity, I was going to bring up two gentlemen who have already testified to actually personalize the issue, and these gentlemen were the fellows from A&R, which is Randall Johnson and Aaron Ollinger, who've got AR Industries, and they were here at the beginning. And the point they were trying to make is they operate their own ship repair business. And they travel up and down the coast doing this. They go where they can to do this work. And they're looking at investing in expanding the business. But this legislation gives them pause because they're concerned, what happens if I invest in building my business, but just up and down the coast, there is a government entity which decides that they're going to operate a shipyard, which is not only maintaining, but perhaps constructing watercraft. This legislation authorizes marine ports in the state of Oregon, if they wished, to set up a shipyard to construct the Queen Mary, any type of watercraft. You heard kayaks mentioned. Now, I know that's a ludicrous proposition, but the whole point I'm trying to make in terms of investment is this is so broadly written that any business investor on the coast who's thinking about getting into a marine trade relating to port activities has to wonder, why would I make this investment knowing that the ports have a blank check about their authority? Now, I want to pause, too, and say it is not as though those of us who were opposed have been unreasonable. I want to quote Senator Roblin on one point. He said, if there is no option as to this, we suggested and continue to suggest, how about an amendment saying that if a port wants to set up its own boatyard or shipyard, that they hold a public hearing, that they make findings of fact that they've been unable to find private sector businesses willing to conduct the business on behalf of the public in the community or the greater community, and go through a bit of a process to establish that they really do need to do this. So someone closes down an ice plant in Coos Bay, okay, hold a hearing. Find out if anyone else is willing to step in from the private sector and operate it. You see what I'm getting at in terms of that. There was also something that Representative Gomberg said that I noted. He said, essential services that the private sector cannot provide. We have attempted to negotiate language that would work for this legislation. And I've got to say, Mr. Landauer can speak for himself, but we got the email back after we tried to approach the Marine Ports, and they are absolutely opposed. That was their phrase, absolutely opposed to any discussion of such amendments. How about taking out the word construct? If it's really necessary to have a port operating a yard, and not just maintaining and providing the yard for others to operate, how about not allowing them to construct watercraft? That gets back to the Queen Mary analogy. We are open to working with folks to change this bill so it is not a blank check to our public ports to compete with the private sector. And please understand, you already heard about the competition. They not only do not pay personal property taxes or real property taxes, they collect taxes, which allows them to subsidize their operation. And yes, I'm passionate about this because as a matter of public policy, we are right now proposing with this bill, not we, the proponents, to do something that is not done in the rest of the United States. Other than federal ports, we could not find public ports that were constructing watercraft, that were operating facilities for those purposes. The only exception we found was the federal government does have some ports where they operate shipyards to construct U.S. Navy vessels and U.S. Coast Guard vessels. And unless we're talking about the need for Oregon to have an Oregon Navy or an Oregon Coast Guard of our own and have our ports construct such ships, we don't need this kind of broad authorization, which, in the opinion of those of us who are opposed, goes way too far. I will mention in passing that we have submitted to you a host of letters and testimonials from folks who are in opposition. Didn't bring 100 people up here to sit in the room, but they're in the record. I will mention that includes a petition signed by 187 people asking you to not proceed with this bill as stated. We simply ask for the opportunity to have a reasonable conversation about how this should be limited. And I'll add one more thing. We even talked about grandfathering in existing port operations if you don't want to talk about the past. No, we can't do that. So here we are. You've got a bill in front of you that we say needs to be changed. And if it's not changed, then it needs to not pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next?
I'll go next. And Senator Beyer, Chairman, I'm Bud Shoemake. I'm the port manager in Toledo. I've been here for about 13 years. I spent 15 years with the Port of Newport as Director of Operations and Harbor Master there, as well as I worked for Fred Wall. I opened the boatyard with Fred. And originally we were going to locate it in Newport and ended up moving it into Toledo. And so I operated it for 6 years for him, managed it, and then he shut it down a couple of years after I left his employment. I respect Fred, and I've known Fred a lot of years. And I support Fred. I actually supported Fred Walmarine in their Connect Oregon project grant application, as well as Soss Brothers in their dry dock. The Port of Toledo bought the boatyard because the private industry did not step forward. I'd like to say that we are the only boatyard on the Aquinas system. At the time, we were the only one that was capable of hauling a boat up to about 200 tons. And we had an old dry dock that was environmentally not right. Sandblasting and painting over the water is what caused contamination. And, you know, the Port of Toledo cleaned up about, we signed a consent order when we purchased the property to clean up that pollution from the Fred Wall operation. We paid $1.5 million, $1.55 million cash, and just about a $3 million tax deduction in addition to that Fred received. The Port Commission, through a planning process that was very, very public, we had support from our entire community for the port to purchase it. It's not a huge yard. It's a long, skinny piece of property. I'm envious of what Fred has with his 35 acres in his new facility and his other facility. We don't have that much room. But what we do have in Newport is a real aggressive, progressive fishing fleet. We're second only to Seattle in the number of our distant water boats. And there's a huge market out there. There's enough for everybody on this coast. Port of Seattle and did a study this last year on the rebuilding of the North Pacific fishing fleet, and some close to $2 billion is going to be spent on these aging vessels that are, the average age is 40 years, you know, and Seattle's trying to capture, they'd love to capture half of that. Well, Oregon stands in a great position to be able to capture some of that. And we have 43 different businesses that operate out of our boatyard. He talked about the sponsoning that's going on the Redeemer. It's one of those deadliest catch boats that was just in the Dungeon Cove. That's a combination of five different vendors and port people. There are things that the port does exclusively, and that is the sandblasting and the spray painting. And the reason for that is controlling our waste streams. And it's essential. You've seen a shrinkage of boatyards up and down the coast that is caused by pollution. And we firmly believe that that's necessary. Everything else, we allow outside vendors to come in, and we encourage them. We've got Aquina Boat Works in the yard now, Kevin Hill, just a number of it takes us all to make it work. And so I'd be glad to answer any questions, but it really is important. We've got a boat that is coming up the river this weekend to be pulled out because of an emergency. You know, it's important. It's keeping our dollars in our community, our families in our community. So, thank you.
So, do you have any intention to build boats?
No, we've never talked about building a boat until this came up. You know, now that being said, you know, ports were created to be economic drivers in their areas by the state, and there may be a time in the past during wartime in World War I, the government was building tugboats in Toledo. And so there were harbor tugs being built. There was actually a government mill at one time, the world's largest spruce mill, that was a government-run mill. So there is times it's not in our any of our planning to be building boats.
So it sounds like your primary function is taking the boats out, and others are coming in and working on them.
That's our primary function. But we do some of the work too. I'm not going to, you know, we have welders, we have sandblasters, painters, we pressure wash the vessels, we block the vessels, and we monitor the vendors. All the vendors have to be licensed through us. That means that they have to have insurance and a business license and license them. So, and we'd welcome the guys from Coos Bay to come up and weld at times we need it.
Okay. Other questions?
I guess I have one.
Yeah.
So if that's all you do, and it's all you're planning to do, I think, you know, you make a lot of people nervous in this room when you have to leave the word constructing in there. Because if it's in a bill, you're going to be able to do it. It's why they do bills. It's why the words are in there. But I guess nobody's willing to do an amendment on that.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Mark Landauer. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Public Ports Association, and I'd like to try to address your question, Senator Thompson. As Mr. Shoemake had pointed out, they have 41 approved vendors that operate at the shipyard. We do not – there may be a time, Senator, that those 41 private vendors decide to put together an attempt to start a shipbuilding company. We don't want to get in the way of that. So for the construction, we would prefer that it stay in so that those individuals who operate private companies may at one time choose to get into that industry. But as Mr. Shoemake has mentioned, that discussion has not taken place. And I believe that the port would not be in the business of actually constructing new vessels, but under the consent decree, some of their employees may be required to actually do the painting in order to avoid any recontamination of the site.
So,
I understand that, but that painting isn't constructing.
No, you're. May I?
Yeah, sure.
This is. I think the way you're looking at that is this allows them to maintain, construct, operate facilities to allow, could read it, to allow others to construct, repair, or maintain watercraft. So okay. It's in the port. The port can create the facilities, and I would say lease it to somebody else or allow them to use it.
Okay.
Indeed.
That's a different way to read it. But you can also read
the bill reads, acquire, construct, maintain, and operate facilities.
Yeah.
Is that how you're reading it?
Yeah.
So all they can do is build the buildings and build the facilities. Do that, they can't do any construction work.
After the preposition changes that. Mm-hmm. What he was saying for constructing, so that the second constructing is the one that's the problem.
May I, Mr. Chairman?
So that's it.
On that point?
Sir.
That's grammatical.
There are presently boats being constructed in our public ports. You don't need any legislative authorization for that. Giddings Boatworks builds boats. And the owner of Giddings' son, Kyle Cox, has Tar Heel Aluminum. They build boats, and they build boats at public port facilities. They've leased the facilities from the port, and they're building boats there.
Right.
So the existing law allows the construction of watercraft at ports. The question is whether or not the port is going to construct watercraft. And by the way, in the analogy you were getting, if a whole bunch of businesses want to get together at the port and build a ship or a boat, they can form a limited liability company and do that. That's different from the port deciding to do it.
Yeah, it doesn't really say that, Kevin. It doesn't say you can do that. It you could read that either way.
And that's why we think there's some clarification.
Senator Riley, you had a question?
I'm reading this too, Mr. Chair, and I don't believe you can read it either way. There are two places in that last number eight on the last lines, the port, and it says the port may acquire, mm-hmm. construct, maintain, and operate facilities for constructing. It doesn't say anywhere that they can construct watercraft.
Yeah.
It says that they can construct and maintain and operate facilities for constructing, repairing, and maintaining any type of watercraft.
Right.
That's how it reads.
Depends on what the phrase is.
It's very clear
construction facility.
When you read it that it doesn't say they can construct watercraft. It says they construct facilities.
Okay. So, Mr. Landauer, do you have other things you want to say?
Well, clearly we've discussed this for quite some time. I had a couple of remarks, if I may. Just a few concluding remarks. Ports compete with the private sector in many arenas. They do so with marinas, industrial sites, grain elevators, the sale of fuel, water taxis, rail yards, subways, ferries, fish processing plants, so on and so forth. So I don't think that this is something that is new. I do want to mention again that there was a legislative council opinion on this. This shipyard supports families through 41 private vendors, similar to the gentlemen who are sitting behind us. They didn't come here today. They're working on some ships. The owner, I should point out, also sold the Port of Toledo Shipworks equipment in that sale. They knew they were going to be conducting shipworks. There was no non-compete clause. This will protect the port from frivolous lawsuits. It will also give them the assurance that if they seek financing, bond counsel will be able to see that they have explicit authority to undertake this work. None of the ports are planning on constructing new vessels. Most of the port employees working on the vessels are doing so under a consent decree from DEQ as a result of the previous contamination. Having a functioning shipyard at Toledo is a life safety issue for the commercial and recreational fleets at the previously mentioned ports. Finally, Mr. Mannix mentioned that we rejected an amendment, and I would like to tell you why we rejected that amendment. The primary reason was that language that he shared with us would have required us to seek the permission of a city or a county to undertake this kind of work. Frankly, we were not interested in ceding that authority to another governmental body. That's why we are here today. Okay. Furthermore, the Port of Toledo has, as I mentioned, no intention of building new vessels. Our association humbly asks that you move this measure unamended with a due pass recommendation. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mark. Questions? Thank you, gentlemen. That's all I have on my list. Does anybody else wish to address this bill?
Thank you.
Seeing none, I think we will close the public hearing, and we will carry this one over until next Wednesday. And
for a work session,
yes. Both of those that I mentioned that we're carrying over, House Bill 2695A and House Bill 2902 are scheduled for work session on Wednesday. Anything else for the good of the order? Hearing none, we are adjourned. You're adjourned.